Mapdu, the poisoned Roman Emperor Claudius, the Aztec storm deity Quetzalcoatl, and a 5,500-year-old Iceman have in common? They were all crazy about mushrooms. I'm Anna McHugh, and I'm a mycophile. Translated into English, that means I'm crazy about mushrooms. I love cooking with them. I also love hunting for them in the woods. It's like a marvelous treasure hunt that makes tromping around in the wilderness even more fun. A couple years ago, I began growing culinary mushrooms at home, and my interest in this unique life form continued to grow. Recently, I embarked on a journey of discovery. You might not know it, but there's an entire subculture dedicated to fungus, and it's a diverse tribe indeed. When I tell people I adore mushrooms, I often get a raised eyebrow and eventually a question or two about psychedelic mushrooms. It's not surprising that people who aren't fanatics for mycology are curious about magic mushrooms, because people have used them for centuries in religious ceremonies, spiritual quests, and at Grateful Dead shows. Americans were first introduced to the magic mushroom rites of Mexican shamans by a former banker and self-styled ethnomycologist named R. Gordon Wasson. This raised the profile of magic mushrooms in the psychedelic revolution that attended the 1960s and 70s.
There was a scholar from England. He got a call from the Pope. He said, come on down to the Vatican to analyze the Dead Sea Scrolls. For 20 years he labored, all alone in a little room. And when he came out, he promptly pronounced that Jesus was a mushroom. Jesus was a mushroom, Jesus was a mushroom.
Another great character in the Western encounter with magic mushrooms was a scholar named John Allegro, who became a pop icon during the age of Woodstock and the Grateful Dead. In his book, The Sacred Mushroom and the Cross, Allegro posited that Jesus and several other biblical figures were not in fact real people, but rather metaphorical references to psychoactive mushrooms that were used by ancient fertility cults. Fast forward to today, and respected scientists are now looking to psilocybin mushrooms to treat mental health issues. I went to talk with Dr. Ralph Metzner about psychoactive mushrooms, their history, and their possible medical uses. Metzner is a clinical psychologist who studied with Timothy Leary at Harvard, and is a prolific author on the subject of clinical psychology and pharmacology.
The psychedelic mushrooms then are one important class of psychedelics, and I got interested in that whole field when I was at Harvard, a graduate student, working with Tim Leary and Richard Alpert. We first used psilocybin, not the mushroom, but the synthetic psilocybin. I thought, and I still think and agree with Leary, that these are by far the most interesting tools that have ever been discovered for psychology or anyone who's interested in the human mind and human consciousness. But a study, a very beautiful study being done where psilocybin is being used in the treatment of end-of-life anxiety, you know, which is phenomenal, actually, in terms of the politics of it.
One of the most fascinating promises of psychedelic mushrooms is their potential to overcome compulsive behaviors. After talking with Dr. Metzner about how these mushrooms are being used to treat people with alcoholism and other compulsions, a story Paul Stamets told me came to mind.
I should preface this by saying that I have a stuttering habit. It's a profound stuttering habit. And so I went through many, many years of speech therapy. So my stuttering habit was the on and on and on. And I still do stutter, but I'm 98% cured of my stuttering habit, largely because of an experience when I was around 18 years of age. I had a massive trip on psilocybin mushrooms, and I had no prior experience, I had no guide, and so I ate what turned out to be a very, very large dose of these mushrooms. And I was in Ohio in the summertime, and I was walking out in the countryside. I thought, wow, there's a big oak tree, you know, up on the horizon. I'm going to go up on that oak tree and climb it. So I climbed it at the beginning of a huge, huge boiling thunder lightning storm that was off in the horizon. So I climbed up on top of this tree, And I waited the storm, and then the winds picked up, and I started to become terrified. I mean, truly terrified. And then the lightning strikes were coming closer and resounding, and here I'm on top of a tree on a ridge during a lightning storm, high on mushrooms, which I've never done before. All the elements for a terrifying experience. But people who have never had the experiences, when you have a lightning strike like that, you have this, you have all these follow-up raster images. And then I realized I couldn't get down. I was terrified, and I hung on that tree for dear life. And I started examining my issues in life. You know, Paul, what's up? You have some big issues that you need to deal with. And so I started saying, stop stuttering now, hundreds and hundreds of times. You know, and I was crying and self-doubt and all that stuff. And the storm eventually passed, and I came down, and I went back to my room and went to bed. And I had a really hard time dating ladies because they wanted the football jocks. You know, they wanted the macho guys. And I couldn't stare people in the eyes because if I stared at them, they would talk to me, and then I would stutter. So I always stared at the ground. So I found mushrooms. That's one of the reasons why I found mushrooms. So the next morning, I was walking along, and this lady that I liked very much, she was walking by me, and she looked at me and said, good morning, Paul. And I looked at her straight in the eye, and I said, good morning. How are you? And I stopped stuttering in one day. Now, I'm not saying that is going to work for everybody, but personally, I realized, oh my goodness, after many, many years of speech therapy, something happened.
The first mushroom fanatic I ever met was Damian Pack, a mushroom cultivator and educator. Damian has grown mushrooms for years and has brought hundreds of different species to fruit. He also loves to wander about in the woods like a mad drunk looking for mushrooms.
Gosh, people always ask me, like, what's your favorite mushroom? Well, that's really, really hard to say. It's funny because I'll say my favorite mushroom to find or my favorite mushroom to eat. One of my favorite mushrooms to find is edible, but most people don't really eat it. It's Pseudohydnum gelatinosum. And it's this little jelly fungi. And it's clear. It's like you can see through it. And when you touch it, it wiggles, it jiggles, and yeah, I love finding that mushroom. It's just a sweet little thing. And then there's the king bolete.
Let's pause 1 second here and chat about boletes. Porcini, steinpils, boletus edulis, call it what you will, the king bolete is one of the most prized edible mushrooms out there.
There was a time when I was picking on the coast in Washington, and I was picking, and I could hear these voices, and it was this Scandinavian family, or they were Russian, or something. I couldn't identify their language, but it was like mom and dad, and little kids, and grandma walking through the woods picking boletes, and they didn't see me. I was hidden in the bushes, and what I was doing was running in front of where they were picking, and picking as many as I could get before they got to them, and it was really insidious. I was like, my boletes, this can have them, my precious, you know, it's like, mine. And at one point I see this whole cluster and I'm like, wow. So I go up and I'm picking them, like getting them in my bag, and I turn around and the papa of this group sees me and I'm like hunched down and I'm feral, man. And like in between me and him, there's a bolete popping up just barely out of the ground, and literally think we both saw it at the same time. We saw each other, and he kind of laughs and then yells over at his family, and I'm like stuck in between this, like, I'm gonna go run and get that mushroom, and but that guy's standing right there, and what do I do? And so I just bolt right at the mushroom. I jump on the ground, stick my hand in the ground, pop it up, lift it up, I look him right in the eyes, and then I'm like, and I run into the woods, you know, and I can hear them laughing and cursing at me. That was really, really funny.
Damian was sure to tell me, however, that it's not just a grand outing. There are consequences to being crazy about mushrooms.
I encountered this thing living in the Northwest for a long time, and I call it PMSD. It's a disorder that I have. It's post-mushroom season depression. And it's kind of hard being a mushroom fanatic because it would be a yearly phenomenon that my girlfriend would break up with me during mushroom season. I eventually ended up having a caveat to my interactions with people. Oh, by the way, I'm completely fascinated by the fungal realm, and to be aware that at any given moment, mushrooms might be popping up and you might not see me for a while.
It's Halloween, and I'm making my way through throngs of costumed visitors at the Fungus Fair put on by the Mount Pisgah Arboretum in Eugene, Oregon. In an open-air display hall, more than 300 species of mushrooms are arranged on long tables decorated to look like the forest floor. Each specimen is painstakingly labeled in Latin. Outside, poisonous mushrooms and their lookalikes are on display side by side, so that visitors can learn to tell the difference between them. It is here that I meet Sue, a volunteer with the Cascade Mycological Society. She is dressed as a raven and gleefully talks with Arboretum visitors about how to tell toxic mushrooms from non-toxic ones. She graciously steps out from underneath the canopy and removes her beak to tell me why she loves events like these.
I just love to mushroom, and I love to be around the people that love to mushroom too. They're just wonderful people. And I think that it gives me hope that, you know, people want to get out and be in nature and enjoy each other's company and do something that moves forward your knowledge. I was just thinking, you know, I love coming to this table and telling people about mushrooms because it keeps me sharp, and we need that. We need the stimulation as people. I definitely think that learning how to just even identify mushrooms and be like, oh, I know what that is. When we're told that we don't really know anything, you know, unless you have a science degree, to actually embody the word amateur, which means a lover, somebody who loves knowledge.
I make my way to a table covered in photographs of exceptionally rare mushrooms. Behind it stands Taylor Lockwood, one of the people I'm here to interview. On tour from his home in Florida, he looks a little bit like Indiana Jones. We took a stroll through the Arboretum, and he told me his story.
My early life was in music, and ended up being rock and roll musician playing electric violin. And ended up in Northern California on the coast in a little town called Mendocino. And outside my cabin were these beautiful mushrooms. So I bought a camera, started taking pictures. I just wanted to take their portraits. That was the start. And this ticket took me all around the world looking for beautiful, fantastic, interesting, and rare mushrooms to photograph.
Reaching the top of a hill, we sat on a bench overlooking the verdant grounds of the Arboretum, and the tale-telling continued.
One of the greatest things that happened to me as a mushroom photographer was discovering bioluminescent mushrooms. So a year and a half ago, I went to southern Brazil. I have a friend, a contact down there, and I made it very clear this is what I wanted to do. I ended up going out 11, 12, 1 o'clock in the morning, walking by myself into the rainforest with my little LED flashlights, looking for bioluminescent mushrooms. And I found them. It is such an exciting thing to walk down a trail and find these gorgeous, glowing mushrooms. When you see them and you kneel down in the dark and pull one of these things up and look at the green glowing gills, it is really, I would say, a religious experience. And it's such a completion to know there are these things out there and then to find them, like a fabulous Easter egg hunt for people that really like to live on the edge of life.
Hey, oh, Michael, searching far and wide. Hey, oh, Michael, searching far and wide. Hey, oh, Michael, far and wide, across the rolling countryside, searching for his answers in the questions of his mind.
Like Taylor Lockwood, Phil Ross uses mushrooms in art. Mycelium is amazingly tough. It sews matter together with dense fibers of fungal tissue. I contacted Phil after learning that he was building a Japanese tea house made out of medicinal mushroom mycelium, and he invited me to visit his art studio in San Francisco.
So this is a corner of my studio, which I'm using as a storage room for some of the experimental forms that I'm casting out of the Ganoderma lucidum mushroom. You know, I've been working with this material for more than 15 years now and making sculptural objects by casting it into forms. And like plaster or cement, it will take on the shape of any mold that it's put within. And you can also literally drink this material. So you can take it and pulverize it and put it into some boiled water and have a tonic that's very good for your immune system. And so I had this idea to make a tea house out of this, like a structure that would literally be drank over its exhibition. And so it'd serve as a kind of like a temporary architectural edifice to medicine, or as a medicinal structure. And that was the idea. Showed a prototype of this in Germany last year in Dusseldorf at the Kunsthalle there for a show called Eat Art. As it moves around Germany, it is being, again, like there's no more sculpture left, and all that remains is a heightened immune response in the population who came to the museum. And so ultimately, I would like to make a very large structure out of this, one that can accommodate 25 people at a time inside of it. So the mushrooms kind of look like, I don't know, the most disgusting cheese in the world. I don't know how else to describe it. Something from the movie Alien. It's a little juicy and squishy. And what does one do with an impact-resistant fungus? This stuff is really amazing. I think I can objectively say it's amazing.
Then it was time to put this building material through some stress tests.
I'll crush another mug for you, a ceramic, I don't know, that seems... Oh, the creativity rainbow one, we can do that. There's nothing more empowering than an idea whose time has come. Well, that seems appropriate. I mean, I feel very, like, late-night TV here. Like, not only can you drink this as a medicine and make a building out of it, but it crushes creative mugs. So, are you ready? Let's see what it did to the mushroom, which is... not that much. But this inspirational mug's never gonna be drank from again. All right, mushroom one, mug zero.
Come to think of it, maybe we should consider retiring the old rubber ducky. Gary Linkoff, one of the great intellects and characters in American mycology, started his interview with me by pulling a duck-shaped object out of his pocket.
I'm Gary Linkoff, and I'm here to... talk about this mycelium duck, which is a phenomenal piece of architecture because it looks so much like a duck and it's just a fungus. So is it a duck or is it a fungus or is it a fungus duck? That's our quandary today. These two guys that work for Ecovative came up and gave it to me and said that they are developing a whole set of very useful products, packaging products and whatnot, that are basically just grown out mycelium that is placed in molds, and then they run it through a kind of a deactivator so that it's not biologically active. So if I need a little duck in my bath, I've got one now.
Most people grow mycelium because they want to harvest mushrooms for food. But there are other reasons to coax fungus to thrive. People like Phil Ross look at fungus and see the potential to craft something useful and even beautiful. I attended three different mushroom camps on my travels. The first was held on the Pacific Coast in Oregon and was sponsored by the Oregon Mycological Society. Mushroom camp is just what it sounds like. A few days that you can cut loose in the drippy woods with other myco-geeks. Campers assemble huge tables and organize all the weekend's finds. The kitchen is jammed with people making and sharing mushroom dishes, and someone always seems to have a microscope handy if you really need it. And my experience in Oregon was a great example. The 100 or so campers rose early Saturday morning and struck out for different parts of the woods. Back at camp that night, I walked to dinner through rain and wind with the luckiest fellow at the foray, who found not only the largest mushroom, but also the most mushrooms.
Yeah, we were hoping to find a few lobster mushrooms and maybe a couple of chanterelles, and I just about filled my truck with lobster mushrooms. And never in my life have I been out mushrooming where I just passed on mushrooms because my basket was too full and I couldn't carry anymore, even though we've emptied it about 15 times. And we found the biggest mushroom I've ever seen. It weighed probably 5 to 10 pounds. It was the size of a hubcap, and it stood about maybe a foot tall. Not really going to be edible because when they get that big, they become very wormy, but it was an amazing specimen.
The next camp I went to was sponsored by the Mycological Society of San Francisco, and it was held in Mendocino. Two members of the Mycological Society of San Francisco, Ken Litchfield and Norm Andresen, helped campers cultivate oyster mushrooms on straw. Norm, a towering, white-haired man in overalls, drove a huge, unmarked white van into camp and pulled out an impressive gas burner and a red metal barrel. Meanwhile, Ken Litchfield, a wiry Texan with a turkey feather in his fedora, showed a crowd of eager folks a big bag full of white, fibrous mushroom spawn, which is used like seed to inoculate mushroom-growing kits.
If you know how to do home canning, we teach that technique for doing how to do home mushroom growing in your kitchen. It's pretty easy to do. Some people are really laboratory-oriented, and you have to be totally sterile and stuff, and we're definitely not totally sterile. We're very organic about it. This is the spawn that we get. It's the mushroom mycelium growing on millet grain, sterilized. One time I had a bag about this size. I forgot I had it. I left it sitting in the corner of a place on some carpet. And one day I was rummaging around, and suddenly there was this giant oyster mushroom, just kind of all creepy looking. And I peeled all the clothes and stuff away, and there was this thing growing in the carpet. It was like a tentacled blob. Definitely, this is a blob organism here. Its stomach is on the outside of its body, so it exudes digestive juices as it makes tentacles and devours raw cellulose, either in the tree trunk, or in straw, or in mulch, or whatever.
By the time I checked back in with Norm, the barrel was full of bubbling hot water and straw.
Okay, what we got here is basically just a 3 million BTU mixed gas Maxim blower. And the point being that we're heating water. We're really not going to boil the straw. We're going to steam the straw in it so we can make it soft, break down the outer cuticle, and then inoculate the hay with the oyster mushroom spawn that we have that's grown on grain. They'll take the straw, they'll put it in a plastic bag, already inoculated, and let it grow out, put it underneath their couch or something, scare mom, whatever. They'll grow this little organism, basically, until it completely consumes the hay. It's a solid mass of white. Then they'll poke holes in the bag, and mushrooms will grow right out of that bag, and then they can eat those mushrooms because they're oyster mushrooms.
The cultivation project went on all evening and well into the morning. And as we packed up to leave on Sunday morning, everyone grabbed a sack before saying their goodbyes and heading back into civilization. One of the queen mothers of all mushroom camps is put on by the Sonoma Mycological Society, based in Sonoma County, California. Soma is a party on par with Bilbo Baggins's 111th birthday. It was in this setting that I spent time with Gary Linkoff. Sharp-eyed, witty and talkative, and wearing a canvas vest with at least a dozen pockets, Linkoff is the quintessential mycologist. Over the years, Linkoff has authored numerous books about mushrooms, including the Audubon Society Field Guide to North American Mushrooms. A longtime resident of New York City, Linkoff has been trying to find all the urban mushrooms in a city that never sleeps.
Usually, when we go mushroom hunting back east, we leave cities and we go out into what we call the woods or forest. I started a number of years ago to just focus on Central Park to see what was the full range of mushrooms that could be found in an urban, overused park. And this year we expanded it to the whole city. And finding out that the diversity is just as incredible as it is in the woods, especially when people don't connect mushrooms and urban areas at all. You know, if you find mushrooms in the city, it means you're finding them in a market. And you say, no, we're in the parks. No, there are no mushrooms in the parks. If it's not in the market, people don't trust it. Why they trust it in a market, I don't know.
Gary is dedicated to finding mushrooms where millions of people overlook them every day. An explorer in a world that offers up the unexpected at every turn. And like so many other mushroom lovers I met, Gary appreciates the intellectual community that he's a part of.
Well, I like working with people at these conferences and forays because they really extend the range of people from absolute beginners to some of the most sophisticated experts in particular fields. And this brings them together. And what I like about that is that I can interact with the beginners at a level that I'm still interested in because I remember when I was one. And here you actually can sit and talk for hours. And there's a great camaraderie here. You don't get the sense that those who know more are putting down those who know less. And so there's a very real sense in which these events are extended families, and I like that. And they want to share. It's a sharing thing. So, I mean, except for Morel sites, it's a very much a sharing experience, you know. And there's no time when you're not really learning. There's always a new way of doing something, or a better way. And I'm still looking for a ideal ice cream recipe for some of these mushrooms.
At each foray I attended, the mushroom folk were welcoming, engaged, and curious about the world in a way that is easy to lose track of when you're hustling around your daily routine. They reminded me that I am alive and well on planet Earth, connected not just to other people, but to other species as well, like a great network of mycelium that crosses all boundaries. I love the fungus fanatics because they taught me that enchantment is real, evolutionary biology is cool, and sometimes you need to observe and appreciate the weirdest things on Earth in order to understand yourself. Learning about mushrooms is a celebration of life. No wonder it makes my heart glad. Crazy About Mushrooms was funded in part by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and community radio station KVMR-FM in Nevada City, California, whose motto is Music of the World, Voice of the Community. I would also like to thank the people who donated online to the project through Kickstarter, the Olympia Food Co-op in Olympia, Washington, for providing me with both road food and gas money, as well as the Oregon Mycological Society, the Mycological Society of San Francisco, and Sonoma Mycological Association for their generous support. I also sincerely thank all the people who gave me their time, energy, voices, and advice. Without you, none of this would have happened. To hear additional interviews, please visit crazyaboutmushrooms.com. This is Anna McHugh, signing off for now because it's almost mushroom season and I've got some forays to plan. I hope to see you in the forest.